Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knazovic here with you on this Monday morning. And we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our good friend Gentry Estes from the Tennessean. Gentry, good morning. How you doing?
Hey, good morning, guys. Good to be with you.
Good to have you with us. Appreciate you taking time to join us. So, Gentry, let's just start on the Vanderbilt front. They're eliminated yesterday after an incredibly long weather delay with not much weather taking place yesterday, but I digress on that front. Vanderbilt goes down, and the second consecutive season that they have failed to get out of regional play. What do you make of how this all played out for Vanderbilt, how they got to this point where they're eliminated again before Super Regional play, and what this means for Tim Corbin and company as they move forward?
Yeah, I mean, obviously a really disappointing weekend, I think, given what happened last week, winning the SEC tournament and basically how the season's gone to this point. I think you would have certainly expected more from Vanderbilt and certainly to make it out of the opening weekend. The draw seemed to set up pretty well for them, but you know, it's baseball. You lose a couple of one-run games, and that's it. And I just feel like, you know, Vanderbilt had a very good season, but when you really watched this team, this was not your typical Vandy boys kind of team. There was not a lot of star power of this group, you know, that you've seen in the past, the kind of teams that, you know, just dripping with all this big league talent. This wasn't that kind of team. They were very mentally tough, and I felt like, you know, very well coached, did a lot of things well, and I felt like they overachieved for a lot of the season. But at the same time, when you really took a look, there were flaws there. The hitting numbers were really never that great. The pitching was dealing with injuries and, you know, without their ace in Carter Holton. And I think it all just kind of caught up to them here in the last couple of games. And you know, this tournament with the NCAA tournament in baseball has a way of exposing your flaws, like, you know, sooner or later. And I think that's what happened.
Yeah. And on the flip side, Gentry, incredible win for Tennessee. They're in good shape. It's, you know, as you said yesterday in the press box, we spent a lot of hours together in the last few days, haven't we? And with Jared, it's been very. It's been quite a joy, but as you said, you know, Southern Miss. I was really looking forward to and it still could happen, like the Penn Quakers coming to Knoxville, and so like the Penn Quakers fans on the message boards and the Vols fans on the message boards going at each other. I mean, it sounds amazing, but it could be Southern Miss, and we think Tennessee would host, but it's not a lock. But Tennessee. I mean, in the meanwhile, like, and you said this, and I agree, like, they probably the higher ceiling than Vanderbilt. You know, they've got their top pitchers are, you know, I mean, those guys, I mean, they got guys who are going to go real high in the draft who now are kind of finding their groove. They got a chance to do something here. When we think in terms of programs, you know, Vanderbilt, Tennessee, like, does this mean anything big picture and that rivalry and those programs moving forward for you?
Not anything more than kind of what we've already seen. I mean, Tennessee's won, seven in a row against Vanderbilt. And I understand, you know, this last year Vanderbilt had a better season, but I think that when you looked at Tennessee's team, they were always right there as, okay, if they ever put it all together, like I say, there is a really high upside to this group. And, you know, you're watching the game on, I guess it was Saturday night, when they go to 14 innings and beat Clemson, this epic, classic kind of game, get a three-run home run there in the ninth inning. It was one of those moments that you could very easily look back on after some team makes a deep run and go, gosh, okay, that game. But you knew at the time, the way things were setting up for Tennessee, if they did happen to get that win, they were going to be turning around and throwing a really good pitcher again on Sunday in Drew Beam. Not only does Tennessee have a very good rotation of pitching, we've known that all year. It's the same guys they had last year for the most part. Not only do they have that, but those guys have been able to stay healthy, and that's a huge deal this time of year. They're deep in pitching, and now that the hitting is going the way it is, there's an awful lot of ability on that team. And, you know, I don't know if you compare it to Vanderbilt, but if you do, it's kind of like I said all along. I felt like Vanderbilt, given the fact that they had all their games at home, was probably a little more likely to make it to Omaha. But I felt like if Tennessee did make it to Omaha, they could be really scary, and I think you're starting to see that set up.
Gentry Estes from the Tennessean with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. So, Gentry, switching gears to the Predators, they hire Andrew Burnett. John Hines is out, and the Predators have now – I mean, you got Trotz coming in as general manager, Burnett coming in as head coach. What do you make of what we've seen from the Predators to this point this offseason and the hiring of Andrew Burnett specifically?
Yeah, I mean, I liked the hire just from the standpoint of – it was the way Barry Trotz presented it, as this is a player's coach. You know, the players are going to like playing for this guy. And I felt like when you looked at, you know, and I think John Hines did a fine job, but if you looked at where things never really stacked up or never really went right, was it probably had to do with the buy-in of some of the Preds' veteran players. You know, it was kind of a trend with John Hines that the Preds seemed to play better when they had guys out of the lineup and younger players coming in to kind of provide enthusiasm. If you can get a guy who does get that kind of buy-in from some of the key veteran players, I think that's something that's really going to help the Preds. So if the way this was presented, I feel like what Barry Trotz has done to this point, I didn't personally agree with waiting a month and a half to finally let John Hines go. I didn't think that was that was a particularly great way to go about it. But I felt like from the standpoint of what this organization needed after, you know, years of just kind of getting stale, I think he's really so far done some good things. I think, you know, he's scratching where it itches, I guess you'd say.
So if you're Barry Trotz, let's go to a hypothetical. He talked some last week about, you know, maybe trying to possibly move up in the draft. Obviously, the Preds have a ton of picks. Would you trade UC Saros for, let's say, you know, moving up into the top five of this draft if it helps you target a particular player you want in your Barry Trotz?
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't trade UC Saros at this point. I think you could probably get a good deal for him, given the fact of, you know, how good he is and what he makes. I think his salary is pretty makes him even more valuable a trade target than it would. You know, he probably doesn't make as much as he deserves, but I feel like until you know a little better what you have in Milwaukee, and I know Askarov is that guy and that kind of prospect and probably the goalie of the future, so it makes some sense, but. At this point, no. I feel like with UC, no matter what's happening in front of him, the Preds are going to go in any game with a chance just because of him. And if you things could get fairly bleak here the next couple of years, but you feel like with UC, they're not going to get too bleak. So I might hold on to that.
Gentry, we were talking about this in the last segment, the idea for the Titans of transitioning from Ryan Tannehill to Will Levis, whenever that is, whether that's at some point this upcoming season, whether that's in 2024, whenever it is, can the Titans remain competitive while doing that and while undergoing that transition? What do you make of that, and what do you make of what you've seen and heard and just from being around Will Levis lately, what kind of stands out to you about all that?
Yeah, I guess that's kind of the big question there is how that's going to come about. And, you know, if the Titans are sitting here facing some sort of major rebuild and reconstruction that would be tied around that. You know, I think for now you've got Ryan Tannehill, and maybe they're out on him. I'm not. I've never really understood where in this process we've all decided to just give up on Ryan Tannehill. I felt like he's played pretty well for the Titans, but obviously he's getting older and you've drafted the guy that you expect to be the future QB. I think it would help Levis or any rookie quarterback to be able to sit there for a full year and take a redshirt year and be able to work your way into that. I think that would be ideal. I think that's what they wanted to do last year with Malik Willis, and they weren't able to do it. So I think the presence of Tannehill is only going to be a benefit, I think, for Will Levis, at least for a year. I mean, I think, you know, Levis is kind of what we thought he was. I mean, he's got a lot of ability, but he's a rookie quarterback coming into the league and is going to have to learn the position like anybody.
So other than Byard, if, you know, Byard talks this week, or let's say other than Byard and the quarterbacks, what about minicamp has you most interested? And I'm asking you because I need you to get me excited about this, Gentry.
Yeah, put me on the spot there. I think minicamp, training camp, if we get a chance just to see more and more of this offense, I'm interested to see that. I just want to see how much different is this going to be, Tim Kelly versus Todd Downing / Arthur Smith era. I personally don't believe it's going to be this huge difference, but I don't know. We'll see. I feel like that, you know, I'm struggling for reasons to hope that the offense, in particular the passing game, is better for the Titans this year. But I feel like if there's any way that it really could be, it could be that change of coordinator. So I'm at least a little interested to see how that's going.
Well, Gentry, really appreciate you taking time to be with us this morning. Thanks for your time as always, and we'll talk to you soon.
You bet. Take care, guys.
Gentry Estes from the Tennessean, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll take your thoughts, 615-737-1025. We covered a lot of ground with Gentry there, so take your thoughts on any of that. Coming up next, we'll get back into the quarterback discussion as well. What are we hearing about some of the other quarterbacks not named Will Levis that were taken very high in this year's NFL draft? We'll get into that coming up next as well. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, presented by TJ Anderson Homes of Benchmark Realty, where their advanced pay by TJ option can save you thousands when selling your home. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by Superbook, live from our 102.5 The Game studio, brought to you by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. Thanks to Gentry Estes from the Tennessean for being with us in the last segment. And Joe, we talked a lot so far of the show about Will Levis and the Titans going through their transition with him. What are we hearing about some of these other quarterbacks that were taken high? Be that Anthony Richardson in Indianapolis, C.J. Stroud in Houston, or obviously Bryce Young taken number one overall by the Carolina Panthers. And I love this time of year, Joe. I really do. Because the quotes coming out about the court, and this is not just a this year type of thing. It's most years when you have rookie quarterbacks coming in. The quotes that are coming out of some of these camps and some of these analysts' mouth are very interesting. Jeremy Fowler hopped on ESPN on Friday and discussed Anthony Richardson and said, quote, "The word I've heard is dazzled. He has dazzled multiple times with the kind of playmaking he can make just early in OTAs. You see glimpses of it. I was told that they know he's going to be a work in progress, but they're optimistic right now based on where he's trending. They have Gardner Minshew, who started games. He can play for them. The Colts are kind of in a middle ground. They're fast-tracking Richardson to play. If he's ready early in the season, then they're going to go for it, but they also know that it's going to take time, so they're not going to rush him in that way either." This was Jeremy Fowler on Friday on SportsCenter. So apparently Anthony Richardson is dazzling the Colts. Lots of high praise for him so far in Colts OTAs.
Actually, that's still not the level of glowing commentary than Matt Ryan got last year.
It's so not.
People need to step it up a little bit. You know, I feel like with Colts fans, it's going to be such a disappointment if Gardner Minshew starts the opener, right?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Like, what is this?
Yeah, I'm assuming he will, but I don't know. It's really interesting. I mean, it's like, because obviously the huge difference between that situation and this situation, Titans have a good veteran starting quarterback. I mean, the Colts, and hey, look, let's give Minshew his due. Minshew's had some moments, including at the expense of the Titans, but it's not like that roster. I mean, I think we've kind of realized that roster isn't, maybe quite what it was cracked up to be. So I don't think they're going to do a lot of winning with Minshew, but they might, they might be quite bad with a rookie. I don't know. But I feel like all this expectation this time of year, and look, he's going to make some incredible plays in the preseason. He's going to have some moments where you're like, whoa, right? But how does that translate to, you know, winning football games on Sundays when he's a rookie? I doubt it.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. I mean, we looked at his obviously we saw him in college, and we saw him play Tennessee. We saw him play Vanderbilt. We see the arm talent, all the things we talked about in the pre-draft process. It's just really hard for me to get to him being NFL ready right now. Like, I think if the Colts are smart about it, they will start Minshew and that they'll let him play for a while. And then at some point next year, then he's ready to go, then fine. You give him some, a shot and you let him play. But I think starting him from the jump may be a mistake. One guy that I think will start from the jump is CJ Stroud down in Houston, taking number 2 overall in the draft. And according to Texans quarterback coach Jared Johnson, Stroud is progressing, quote, already way, way ahead of pace. That was the quote from Jared Johnson, the quarterback's coach down there in Houston. So CJ Stroud apparently turning heads down there in Houston as well. Anthony Richardson dazzling, and CJ Stroud is way, way ahead of pace.
Yeah, it's just, you're not going to hear like, oh, man.
This guy's terrible. Granted.
Yeah, right. You know, now granted, there were some people freaking out about Levis last week around here, you know. So the Nate says, would Titans fans care if great to bad went Stroud, Levis, Richardson? I think I'd be all right with Levis being in the middle of Stroud and Richardson. So I assume you're talking this year? And obviously all three teams hope that ultimately the guy they picked is the better one. You know, the thing is, like I agree with you, Robbie, about Richardson. You know, I don't think he's – yeah. I mean, there's got to be – it's a work in progress, and it probably wouldn't look good. But I don't think Stroud or Levis – I just don't expect any rookie quarterback to be that good.
Except Bryce Young.
Well, yeah, but that's different. He's basically an all-pro, you know, an all-pro who just is, you know, just moving teams. He's just changing teams from all-pro to all-pro. No, honestly, I expect Bryce Young to have some, you know, to have some growing pains. And I think he's more ready than a lot of quarterbacks. I know someone's going to – I mean, Herbert comes to mind. Burrow comes to mind.
Yep.
So we have had some rookie quarterbacks in recent years who have come in and looked really good. But it's not also still not perfect, you know. I mean, Burrow, it's interesting because obviously, like, he had great weapons around him, but he had a terrible offensive line. And then, of course, he tears his ACL. I mean, one of the first glimpses of Burrow, and you're like, whoa, is that win over the Titans, which was a huge upset at the time, you know, in 2021. But you don't too often, you know, get what you're hoping for from your rookie quarterback if they're out there on the field.
Well, and even, you know, Nate brings up the question, would you be okay if it went, you know, Stroud, Levis, Richardson in that order? Probably not, because there's also Trevor Lawrence in that division too, right? I mean, Trevor Lawrence – I think we know that Trevor Lawrence is good. I think we know that he's a good player and that he's going to be a good starting quarterback in the league. The question with him is, like, is Trevor Lawrence going to eventually be one of those elite guys? Is he going to be in the conversation with an Allen or a Lamar Jackson or a Joe Burrow? Like, that's a lofty bar. I get that. But is he going to be an elite guy? But I feel good about him being a good player. Like, Trevor Lawrence has all the ability in the world. He is going to be a good player. So, like, if you told me right now that Will Levis would be Trevor Lawrence, like, wouldn't you take that if you're a Titans fan at this point?
Oh, you better. Oh, my gosh, yeah. But that's also the funny thing about this, because Trevor Lawrence was absolutely can't miss going to be an elite quarterback.
Right.
He was easily, clearly, the number one pick. And it was, I mean, there were some people talking generational and quarterback, and what is he? He's good. He might be, I mean, he could be great. I'm not ruling that out. He had the 1 year with Urban, and that was just a disaster of a year, so it's almost like you didn't have a rookie year. I mean, maybe ultimately there's a benefit to him being out there for all that stuff, but he's had 1 year in Peterson's system and it looked pretty good. But still, it's a good expectations temperer. You know, that guy comes in, and in this league, it's like, yeah, he's good. I mean, that's, if you could have that with Will Levis, what he is essentially basically the same level of QB, like, especially like at that time after year two, and you're around the same, then Will Levis, that's a good pick. Man, you like the way that's looking for sure.
Well, and the really interesting thing to me with all these quarterbacks, particularly the ones here in the AFC South, is that they're all going to develop differently. Like I would be shocked if CJ Stroud is not starting day one for the Houston Texans. Just, I mean, some of that's based on their own quarterback situation. And my guy Davis Mills, like you're probably starting CJ Stroud at that point. We'll see about Richardson. They have Gardner Minshew, who has at least started games before, and at the very least is a really good backup in the league. So we'll see what happens there. But I think there's a strong chance that, you know, by week 5 or 6 this year in the league, you'll have Stroud starting for the Texans. You could have Richardson starting for the Colts. And I'm sure, Joe, that there will be moments where they look really good and Titans fans are looking around and saying, well, what about our guy? Why can't we play him? Or there are probably moments where they have their rookie moments and don't look great either. The thing that I would encourage everybody to keep in mind is I shouldn't say I don't care, but I don't put a whole lot of stock into what the quarterback looks like in year one. I'm more concerned about what they're going to look like down the line and the best path to getting them to playing good football. For some, maybe that is playing right away. Maybe it is, you know, the Joe Burrow route. But we've also seen some guys, Joe, I think, come in and they play too early and their confidence gets shot, and who knows what they could end up being at the NFL level. So there's no exact science of how to do it, but I think there's a strong chance that you could be a Titans fan looking around and maybe you're, who knows, maybe by week 6, like the Titans are 3-3 or 2-4 or whatever it is, and you see C.J. Stroud and Anthony Richardson playing for the Colts and Texans respectively, and you're like, what are we doing? Why are we not playing our guy? And I think there's going to be some patience that needs to be required here from Titans fans.
No, no doubt. Now, look, if Tannehill's not very good, the offense isn't very good, the team isn't very good, then at some point, sure, get him out there. But if you could, as a Titans fan, if you knew right now Will Levis won't take a snap in 2023, to me, that's a good thing. That means that Tannehill stayed healthy and probably played well.
Yep.
And your team had a pretty good year. And also, it's just I feel like if you are a QB prospect who plays early and quote unquote like it ruins you, then maybe you weren't built for it. Because obviously, like Peyton Manning is the great example of just awful team, awful performance by him, looks just terrible. I mean, you're talking about a guy who was operating Heisman level player in college in a pro style offense, looking awful at the NFL level. We know what happened with him. So like there's a lot of examples of taking lumps and it being a benefit. But if Levis can have that whole year, I think that's a great thing for him, and it probably means good things for them.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025. We'll continue to take your thoughts on the Titans coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Looking forward to the second annual Music City Celebrity Golf Tournament presented by Gary Force Acura, benefiting Souls for Souls coming up this Wednesday. If you'd like to support Souls for Souls, you can check out the silent auction items or make a donation. All you have to do is visit thegamenashville.com/golf. For more information. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexroad, Michelle Knezvik here with you, taking your thoughts on the Titans at 615-737-1025. Michael in Madison on the text line says, the only time Levis should be in a game this year is if we're up 45-10 with 7 minutes left in the game. Which, hey man, if the Titans score 45 points in the game this year, I'll be ecstatic. They did not do that last year.
How about that?
They have two games that equal 45 points, that'll be pretty...
Be an improvement.
Pretty good.
Remember, defenses are allowed to score touchdowns.
They are. They are. Who knows? Maybe some special teams kick return touchdowns.
Couple Byard pick sixes.
Kyle Phillips, he's back there returning punts this year, and he holds on the ball. He did have a great punt return in week one, and then he muffed one.
That will be interesting in all seriousness. Will Kyle Phillips get a chance to be the guy again doing that after the struggles he had, fielding punts, but he's without question a threat.
I think you've got to give him another chance. I know that he muffed one in the Giants game and in the Bills game. I get it. But I think you've got to put him back there just because of the threat you think he can be and how shifty you think. Now, look, you know, if we get into to week one against New Orleans and you put him back there and he immediately, like, drops the punt, I mean, at some point you just say, well, we love what you can do with the ball in your hands, but we don't trust you whatsoever to actually field the punt. You got to move on after that. But for him to be as gifted as he is returning punts, and we saw it in college, and we saw a glimpse of it last year in the Giants game, I would love to see him get a shot. And we'll see, you know, what he does with it. We'll see if he starts fumbling the ball again, then you got to move on at some point. But I think the playmaking ability that he's got back there, I'd give him a chance.
Yeah, I mean, next mishandled punt by him is probably his last, right?
Yeah.
But I agree. He's too, and some of this will just, it'll be based on how he looks. This is where practice does matter. Practice does translate to the games. All right now, how's he doing in terms of fielding it? Now, I can't tell you, like, in training camp, did he have struggles at all catching punts? I don't remember any of that. I also can't tell you that I, like, closely watched when they went over to the side field and were fielding punts. But, I mean, I think I'm sure he was fine, and he was fine in college, and then he has a couple moments in the NFL where it's just different. So you also hope that second-year player, been through some stuff, been through some injury, you know, a little more calmed down, everything slowed down for him, and that it won't be a problem. And then the Titans may actually have something they've been looking for a long time at punt return.
Matty says Spears greater than Phillips on returns. Talking about Tyjae Spears.
And it could be him. It could be him. I think Spears on kickoff return, which I know usually doesn't mean much anymore, but I think that's certainly a real likelihood, and maybe it's him on punt return too. That'll be very interesting to watch. It's good to have options.
Jared from Spring Hill on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says, you know what's funny? Not drafting any wide receivers or having very many explosive players and hearing all the five wide sets that we are running in practice. Comedy. This is from Jared in Spring Hill on the text line. At least he's in a comedy spirit.
Hey, man. I get it. I get it. I really do. But you never know. I feel like if the Titans don't do anything, that has to speak to some confidence. It certainly speaks to lack of confidence in the free agent crop.
Sure.
We know what happened in the draft. I think they were going to draft a receiver, and they missed out on their guys, on their board. You know, and they draft in the seventh round. But I think it may speak to confidence in someone that we're not necessarily aware of at this point.
Like Racing McMath?
Well, maybe. It could be. I don't know. I mean, we were talking about this in the interminable hours and hours and hours of sitting in a press box. By the way, John Glennon, first time I've ever seen him in a baseball press box.
Hey, awesome. Way to go, Johnny.
I know. And then Jared would, like, leave his little Xavier fan section and come hang out with us during rain delays. But, I mean, who is – I mean, it's Chris Moore, right? We never talk about Chris Moore. But I was like, you know, Chris Moore this year could be – I mean, basically Chris Moore could be, like, in the same realm of what Robert Woods was for the Titans last year. Remember, Robert Woods was supposed to be way more than he was.
Sure.
You know, he was a flat-out disappointment, but – like, he could be something like that. I mean, it's probably...
Well, he was something like that. Like, last year, Robert Woods had 53 catches, 527 yards, and two touchdowns. Chris Moore had 48 catches, 548 yards, and two touchdowns. They're, like, basically the same player.
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, that. Like, and I'm not telling anybody to get excited about it, but it's serviceable. So, Burks... What if Burks is, you know, becoming a number one receiver? What if Phillips is pre-injury, dangerous, short space, lethal slot receiver? And then you're serviceable with Moore and Westbrook-Ikhine. Again, I know you're not excited about that. But then do you have a little bit more juice than you thought in a McMath?
Well.
I mean, I'm trying to make chicken salad out of you-know-what.
I know.
Right now for you.
Okay? Well, right now, that's what, based on the way the roster is currently constructed, that's what they're going to have to do. Like, and you're talking, even if Burks is best version of himself, whatever that is, whatever the best version of Treylon Burks is, to me, they're still going to have to do that to a certain degree. If that's what he is, you have Kyle Phillips in the slot, and then you have serviceable guys on the outside. Like, it's hard for me to get anywhere beyond serviceable with a Chris Moore, Nick Westbrook, Akine, or a Racy McMath. That doesn't mean that you can't make plays with them, but serviceable, I think, is about all you're getting out of those three.
And as Maddie points out, you know, in terms of the five wide stuff, that's good because Spears is lining up in the slot quite a bit.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think Spears is going to be moved around and utilized. This is where the OC – look, Chigakonkwo, I think, certainly as a detached mismatch for the right matchup, is also, you know, I think you're going to see him moving around a lot too. Like, there's all the focus on him having to make those inline gains, and that's something, you know, there's no clue that we could ever get about that now. I mean, really little bit in the preseason when they do the practices, stuff like that, you know, and some of the padded practices. There's so much focus on that, but also, I mean, he could have a more creative and expansive role moving around basically as a pseudo receiver, you know? So you keep that in mind too. Spears, Chig, along with some of these guys. I mean, it doesn't have to be terrible. I still go back to, like, the receiver room is the worst. You know, I think it's 32nd in the NFL right now until proven otherwise.
Yep.
But I still say the offensive line is the key, because if it's functional and a big step up, Tannehill's going to find open people out there. He's going to find guys and make plays.
I agree. I still go back, like, at wide receiver, though, beyond the starting depth, which everybody keeps talking about, the question I have is, like, what if somebody goes down? Like, what are you doing if Kyle Phillips gets hurt? What are you doing? I mean, especially if Treylon Burks get hurt, that's a different discussion. But, like, if any one of these guys go down, like, you just have no depth at wide receiver. And so if it's a Burks or Phillips, to me, you're screwed at wide receiver if one of those two guys gets hurt.
So you're just going to disrespect Mason Kinsey like that?
I am.
Hey, every time receivers get talked about, I swear to you, unprompted, Mason Kinsey is brought up. I'm just saying.
He's done a nice job of hanging around the last couple of years. It's very impressive. He's very good in the preseason.
He is going to light the Bears up in that
preseason. Oh, he's going to destroy them.
You know.
Yes.
You know he's going to. Yeah, sorry, Ryan from Chicago, but Mason Kinsey's in your face in a couple weeks.
I could see just 12 catches, 135 yards, a couple touchdowns for Mason Kinsey in the preseason game, and people would be fired up. I mean, you'd have to go there at that point, honestly, though, wouldn't you? Like, he's your other slot guy.
Another thing that I wonder about, yeah, no, he is. I mean, he is the backup to Phillips.
Yeah.
So I do think that if there's another injury, I think there's more likelihood of seeing him. But again, that also comes down to how much Tim Kelly cares about, you know, having a true, quote unquote, true slot receiver, you know. You can obviously move all kinds of people around in the slot. You know, another thing to watch, and I know it's just spring exaggeration, but what if Dez Fitzpatrick actually is becoming a decent player in Pittsburgh?
I know. I saw that's apparently he's turning some heads, there. And that would be something. Can you imagine Dez Fitzpatrick? He's like wide receiver 3 for the Steelers this year. Whoops. Sorry.
I mean, that goes to the text earlier. It was like, you know, Levis will go lead someone to a Super Bowl in 24. Ellie Tolvanen. Lighten it up in Seattle.
Yes. People all the Titans players in Atlanta with the Falcons.
Yeah. Go get one of those guys.
Are you predicting they'll go to the Super Bowl this year?
Absolutely not. But hey, why not throw it out there? Yeah.
It's worth a shot. 615-737-1025, our phone number. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, it is time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning at 745 here on the program. We will do that coming up next. Make sure you join 1025-1063 The Game tomorrow night for the Night Before Charity Riders Round featuring Saving Able, benefiting Souls for Souls, a part of our golf tournament. General admission is $20, with every ticket going to purchase a new pair of shoes for a child experiencing homelessness in Middle Tennessee. It's happening at the brand new The Ballot East next to the Gallatin Hotel in East Nashville. Doors will open at 6 o'clock. You can get your tickets now at thegamenashville.com/golf. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063 The Game.
The time is now for the Rex Rant.
Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
On Robbie and Rex Road, here on ESPN 1025 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
And it is that time of the day, time for the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning at 7:45 here on the program. Joe Rexroad, the floor is yours. I turn things over to you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, you know, for someone who hates Twitter, I swear I hate it, and who constantly wishes it would go away so I don't have to be on it anymore, I sure do go on there a lot and use it a lot, and I'm going to use it now for this little rant because it can be I think quite revealing. And so this is basically a sequel to I think what I ranted about right around a year ago when the Vols lost to Notre Dame. and this was not Twitter as much, well, although it was Twitter too, as much as it was the column I wrote off that, which was basically nothing but Vanderbilt fans in the comments. Like, Vanderbilt fans were so much more excited about Notre Dame getting to the College World Series than Notre Dame fans were last year. It was like, oh, yeah, baby, this is a rivalry. So I'm just going to go through. Now, let's review with Vols fans, okay?
Okay.
Vols fans got to watch, to me, if you're a Vols baseball fan, and I know some Vols fans, it's maybe a little more casual with baseball. But for the Vols fans in particular who are really have really gotten into this program and this team and Vitello and these players and everything, I mean, Saturday night, like that was like, again, I'm not comparing it because it is different. I mean, college football is bigger and a bigger deal and means more to a lot more people. But that win over Clemson was like the Alabama win in football in terms of
drama.
Like how the drama and just the clutch performances all over the place. I mean, you're talking about the last guy on the roster with two sack bunts and the final strike. Chase Burns gives you a start in the middle of a game. It was amazing. Okay. So that's where Tennessee fans are yesterday. They got that, which is, you know, huge. Then they realize their team broke Clemson. I mean, Clemson's the number four seed in this tournament. Clemson is one of the favorites to win it all. 16 straight wins, and you watch that team play that night. And I hadn't watched much of them this year, but, I mean, like, they are legit, man. They got guys. They got pros. They got a great coach, Eric Bakich. Vanderbilt guy, by the way, former Michigan fan, all that stuff, right? So then you know that you broke them and you're able to enjoy your team just throttling Charlotte. Drew Beam, fantastic performance by him. It's like, man, you got the arms, you got everything. Like, this team is loaded up, ready to go, and you're probably hosting in Knoxville, although there is a little more momentum today that maybe Southern Miss would get the region. We'll see. Whatever. Regardless, huge weekend for Tennessee baseball. And yet, I'm going right now. I just tweeted about, and I understand it's not that hard to tweet something, right? But if you go out of your way to like go find like a Seinfeld gif, you know, it's a shame on the couch. I mean, to me, that's a little bit of effort.
It is.
I mean, it is an absolute avalanche of Vol Twitter reaction, way more than Vanderbilt reaction to the tweets about Vanderbilt's loss yesterday. You know, they wait for 4 hours, they play for 4 minutes, 1, 2, 3, and they're done. And it's just, and then it's back and forth. The Vanderbilt, you know, it's, oh, yeah, why don't you guys do something? You know, it's Vanderbilt and Tennessee fans going back and forth. Look, just acknowledge, it's fine. I think it's great. I'm not ranting because I'm mad about it. I just want everybody to acknowledge it. And I wrote a column about it, too, which I just tweeted out. Like, the misery of your rival almost means more than the success of your own team.
Yeah.
In this particular rivalry. Again, there's no other rivalry where, like, there's no sport. Maybe it gets there at some point, you know, it has been there in the past with women's basketball for a brief period. You know, Vanderbilt was, like, arguably, like, top five program in the country. It was just that Pat Summitt was coaching. Certainly not there in football, and it's hard to envision that. But in this sport, you're talking about national championship contenders, which is great. And you're also talking about, like, just the dynamic of Tennessee is Rodney Dangerfield and Caddyshack, you know, and Vanderbilt is Ted Knight. And that's what it is. You know, Tennessee is the new money. Hey, goofball coming in, Vitello. You look at my awesome golf bag. Hey. You know, and Ted Knight, well, we're waiting. That's exactly what this rivalry is. It's fantastic. I love it. I just want you all to acknowledge that you are more into hate watching each other than love watching your own teams.
Yeah, like I'm looking at – I mean, I saw some of this last night once the weather delay finally happened and they resumed play around 8 o'clock and Vanderbilt lost. Tennessee fans were all over it last night. I'm looking at your tweet from 8:05 p.m. last night when it was made official that Xavier wins. And, man, there are a lot of Tennessee fans responding to your tweet last night.
Yeah?
Good gracious.
I was like, what? Man, you guys were ready. And also, by the way, some of the responses are like tagging Aria Gerson. You know, and yeah, look, friend of the show, Aria. We had some fun conversation about this weekend. Like, she is, you know, Vanderbilt beat writer for the Tennessean, for those who don't know. She has become, like, public enemy number one with all tweets.
Yeah.
I mean, like, they're just going out of their way to get after Aria now. I would ask Vol Twitter. I know that you're, like, this amazing and awesome force, and I should just, like, shield my eyes and look away and not even address you, you know, directly, you know? But maybe, like, take it easy on, you know?
Well, it's interesting because I feel like this really hasn't happened all that much, or at least I guess maybe I just haven't noticed it. In football or basketball recently between Tennessee and Vanderbilt. Like, you know, there's always some degree of Tennessee fans and Vanderbilt fans getting into it. I mean, it's an in-state rivalry. So you're going to have it regardless of the circumstances to some degree. But, like, you know, I don't remember a whole lot of trash talk going on the week of Tennessee and Vanderbilt playing each other in football this year. Like, it was, you know, Tennessee was coming off the South Carolina loss and Vanderbilt – Some people were picking Vanderbilt to win, which I always thought was asinine that year. But the basketball game, I mean, when Tyron Lawrence hit the big shot, there was a little bit of back and forth then. But it's really the baseball rivalry where there's a lot of hostility between Vanderbilt and Tennessee fans. It's fun. I like it.
It is. And, you know, I mean, what it is, obviously, is like this has been Vanderbilt's domain. This is their little corner of the world. You know, now granted, they love when Tennessee struggled through football and all that stuff too. But like this is their domain. They got the best coach in the game. They got the best program. They've had the best program, especially if you know, again, beyond two national championships and all the College World Series. But you know, like just everything about it, it's a model program. And now you got it's almost like Tennessee didn't care that much. You know what I mean? I think Tennessee fans like, yeah, baseball. But now you bring this guy in and he's shaking things up. And I think there's just some personal dislike for him, of course, but also just like this infringement on the one area where Vanderbilt can puff its chest out and say, this is us, you know, like this is our domain. So I think that's a lot of it. And yeah, but also one thing I've learned about this too is like, I feel like Tennessee fans like really dislike Corbin too, you know?
And which is amazing. Like, I think,
yeah. But hey, man, whoever's in the way.
I know.
Nate says Vandy tears taste better than any alcohol. So there you go.
Well, I will say though, like, I definitely have caught myself hate watching. Like, if my team's in something, I'm like, okay, I want us to win. And obviously, Kentucky is us I'm talking about. But like, the odds of winning it all are slim, but as long as, you know, the rival that you don't like also loses and doesn't win it. So
you enjoyed watching some Louisville hoops.
Yeah. Oh, I enjoyed it. Right? I mean, let's not be mean to Aria because we love Aria, but I enjoy some hate watching, a little trolling on Twitter. It's kind of fun.
It is fun. I this is why, though, Joe, eventually at some point, an Omaha matchup between Tennessee and Vanderbilt has got to happen. And I was really hoping for it this year. A couple of years ago, I thought we might have a chance. You know, last year when Tennessee was going on their historic run, I thought we might have a chance, and neither one of them made it to Omaha. We need it at some point. And I guess it doesn't necessarily have to be the College World Series final, although that'd be great. But at some point, we need a Tennessee-Vanderbilt matchup in Omaha.
No doubt. Like April in Portland. I'm not a Vandy fan, but I wanted Vandy and Tennessee to make it the World Series and be the top two teams. Nah, I mean, that would be amazing. Some years they could be on the same side, but this year it would have actually been in the finals. Yeah, I know. We need it. We need it bad. And that's the thing. I mean, with Tennessee doing what it did, you know, I mean, that game was over Saturday. So I'm like, uh-oh. And they're in good shape. And I mean, you know, Vanderbilt's going to handle Oregon here, right? So here we go. We're on the path, but then we know what happened.
We do know what happened. Although I say that, I mean, obviously an Omaha matchup between Tennessee and Vanderbilt would be great. But I do think you've hit something here. Like, I think Tennessee fans enjoy watching Vanderbilt lose so much in baseball, and Vanderbilt fans enjoy watching Tennessee lose so much. Like, if Tennessee goes on in the Super Regional here and they lose to Penn or Southern Miss, I mean, Vanderbilt fans are going to have a field day with it.
Oh, they awesome. Will.
Oh, I mean, imagine like the Vanderbilt Penn combination, yeah. You know, of like a quiz bowl their ass out of that stadium. Rob says, as a Vandy fan, the hardest part about UT baseball is their coach is so damn good looking. This is from a married man.
Got great hair.
Great. He's got the flow. I mean, you know, that Tony V got the sweet Eazy-E t-shirt, too.
Yeah.
I mean,
that friend of the show.
Cool. He's just cool.
He is. 615-737-1025, our phone number, 615-737-1025. This has been the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning at 745 here on the program. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Corey Curtis from News 2. You're listening to Robbie and Rexroad, 1025-1063, the game.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what it feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.